Okie dokie. Our second speaker today is Dr. Curtis Luckett. Originally from Iowa, Curtis received his PhD in food science from the University of Arkansas. He later joined the faculty in the Department of Food Science at the University of Tennessee. While at Tennessee, Dr. Luckett has developed a research program focusing on various aspects of food perception and sensory methodology. I'd like to welcome Dr. Luckett.
All right, thank you. I'm going to be talking a little bit more about the physiological underpinnings of variations in individual texture perception. So texture perception is interesting because there's a lot of physiology involved. There's a lot of physical forces, those types of things. And it also involves the sense of touch inside the mouth. So we basically did a series of studies looking into how these physiological underpinnings can maybe give us some insight into individual preferences and individual relationships with different texture attributes. So there's a lot of reasons why you can have individual variation in texture. Everything from your oral mucosa shapes, so for example, dental structure, how many teeth you have, how thick your saliva is, all these different things. We wanted to concentrate on really two, oral processing and tactile sensitivity. So oral processing would relate to all those physical things you're doing to create a bolus and swallow, and tactile sensitivity is just really how sensitive to touch you are, and I'll cover those in a little bit more detail. So when I'm talking about oral processing, it is a little bit complicated because our mastication sequence is very unique. The concept here is a mastication feedback loop, meaning that your brain is actually sending rhythmic contraction signals based upon how that food initially feels in your mouth. Very similar to maybe like the breathing signal that your diaphragm's getting. It's coming from deep within your brain. It's coming from your brain stem. These are not highly processed signals. However, these rhythmic contractions can be modified by tactile stimulation coming from the oral cavity. So feelings, sensations, touch from the oral cavity, i.e. the food's texture, can be been brought back into this loop and start to modify mastication behavior. Without any tactile feedback, mastication behavior will not be modified. So from examples of how tactile feedback can be used, simply it can be used to make sure you don't bite your own tongue off, right? You can, how you are processing the food orally, you also wanna make sure you're gonna be safe doing that, not clashing your teeth together, all of that type of thing. And it's actually kind of interesting because this is one of the few instances where you'd have a lot of tactile feedback with a body movement, but you never get to see it. You very rarely get to see yourself chew. So your brain has to be very attuned to where your jaw's positioned, where your tongue's positioned, et cetera, et cetera. The next is goes into the food. So locating particles of food that need further processing. Locating the bolus itself, making sure you're optimizing your destruction of the food so you can prepare it for swallowing as quickly as you can. So these are kind of real world examples of how this tactile feedback would come in. So this can also involve tongue movements and other different cheek contractions, things of that nature. So when I'm talking about oral tactile sensitivity, there's not a consensus on what this actually means. It does mean the sense of touch in the mouth, but you can perceive touch several different subtypes. You can have stretching, you can have pain, you can have vibration, you can have pressure. So there's different tactile sensitivity measurements for each kind of one of those subtypes of touch. So there's the common Essex test, there's the Sims-Weinstein monofilaments, which are very common on like people doing hands and feet tactile sensations. Some of these have been used in the mouth, some of them haven't. We really wanted to try to find tactile sensitivity measurements that would be highly likely to be looped back into that masticatory feedback loop. And so we really wanted to help understand how are these mastication patterns being modified? What sense of touch, if you will, is playing a role there? Additionally, we also know that the oral tactile sensations are gonna be in this codependent loop with oral processing. So that's on the bottom right there. It's kind of a graphic, is how you chew a food influences how it feels in your mouth and vice versa. You do not chew a Starburst the same way you chew an almond. So the first study is really designed to answer the question is what measure of oral tactile sensitivity is important for chewing? So to do this, we looked at oral stereogenosis, lingual tactile acuity, and bite force sensitivity. I'll just go over those in detail later, but those are the three that we kind of hypothesize would be integral to this masticatory feedback loop. we wanted to make sure there was going to be variations in mastication and tactile sensitivity. So we did a study in different age groups. Age groups are kind of a way to cheat to get variations. And there's also an interest in understanding the older consumer. As the population of the Earth gets older, there's more of a food market there. And then the last part is we wanted to relate this to mastication performance. And I'll talk about how we measured mastication performance, but the whole idea was to really identify which measures of tactile sensitivity are important for mastication performance. So to do this, we took 100-ish people in three different age groups. So 20 to 25, 30 to 45, 35 to 45, and above 62, which we classify as the old group. Please don't take that personally if that's your age group. There's good news to come. So we eliminated anybody with severe dental abnormalities, such as full dentures, things like that, because we really wanted to concentrate on age as a factor, not dental status. So for example, you can't balance for dental status because there's very few 22-year-olds with full dentures. So this is our participant group. When I mentioned earlier, we wanted to measure oral sensitivity and mastication performance. So the oral sensitivity tasks in detail. So the first one is oral stereogenesis. And so this is how well you can identify shapes in your mouth. The procedure here is to blindfold a subject, give them a gummy letter, you administer them a gummy letter in the oral cavity, and they manipulate it until they can identify that. So you have a 1 in 26 chance of guessing correctly, and a correct score gives you a point, and an incorrect score gives you no points. A bite force sensitivity. So this is basically a 2 AFC with different compression factors of foam. So you, between your molars of your teeth, we administered some foam, you'd bite down, and you'd bite down another one, and you try to tell which one of the two are harder. You get a correct or an incorrect answer. Another one is lingual tactile acuity. So this is how sensitive to touch you are in your tongue. And we use the variation of the Essek test that used shapes instead of letters because we have goals of doing this cross-culturally and we don't want to assume knowledge of the Latin alphabet. We looked at these all three individually, but we also formed a total index, just basically an unweighted index of somebody's ability to feel these sensations in their oral cavity. To measure mastication performance, we used a really simplistic method where we took a piece of bubble tape that was pink, a piece of bubble tape that was blue. We cut them to be 1 centimeter, stuck them together, and then we had somebody chew them for X amount of time or X amount of chews. And then we basically flatten it out into a disc and take a picture and then count the amount of pixels as a measure of mixing, of color mixing. So here you can see on the left would be a very unmixed piece of gum, and on the right would be a really high level of mixing indicating high levels of masticatory performance. That person is good at that skill set of making food mix, which is what mastication is really designed for. So interestingly, we found that, like previous literature, some oral sensitivities decline with age, some don't. So stereogenesis, the ability to identify those gummy letters, did decline with age, but not until you got to the older age group. The lingual sensitivity, the sense of touch on the mouth, actually declined a little bit more linearly still with age. So these are clear indications that tactile sensitivity is declining as you get older. Now, the good news is mastication performance doesn't. So there's a lot of information out there if you look at rehabilitation stuff after stroke, on dysphagia and trouble swallowing, all that stuff. But age as a singular factor is not really playing that big of a role into masticatory performance. Interestingly, though, if you look at the distribution within the older age group, it's a little bit different from the other two age groups. It's not so normal. It's multimodal in distribution. This is basically saying that age does affect some people's ability to chew, but not others. So as you get older, some people are going to experience declines in chewing ability, some people won't. So the age by itself isn't doing that. This is similar to what we see with some other chemosensory declines as people age. For example, smell. Smell declines in some people, but not in others. As a whole, though, if you take older individuals, their average thresholds or whatnot would be altered from where they were when they were younger. So back to answer the question, what makes somebody a good chewer? Well, none of the three things we measured. That's the correct answer. So we didn't really find any of our oral tactile sensitivity measurements to highly correlate with masticatory performance. So that was kind of a downer. However, we did some follow-up studies, which I'm going to show, that kind of help explain this. Now, why wouldn't we see this? One of the things I think is that our measure of masticatory performance was relatively an easy task. Gum is pretty soft. It was only, 10 seconds, 15 seconds. So we didn't give people a lot of time to differentiate themselves, maybe. If we would have given them a piece of beef jerky and had them go to town, maybe we could start to see some differentiation in the masticatory performance. We did find that some of these sensitivity measurements were significantly correlated with each other, hinting at they're measuring the same type of oral tactile sensitivity. And we found others that weren't at all, meaning that they're measuring different aspects of oral sensitivity. So takeaways from that first study is that there are individual differences in masticatory performance and tactile sensitivity in the mouth. However, those don't really have too much of a relationship between each other. And for those of you who are interested, age is a significant factor in some measures of oral sensitivity, not others, and also not everybody that gets older loses their sense of touch in the mouth and their masticatory behavior. So to get into more detail about this mastication thing that doesn't seem to be telling us a lot, we wanted to get a little bit more detailed with our measurements of mastication. So this is also going to be bringing in a real food type of stimuli. Are these people different in their perceptions of food? So we first wanted to test if these people with high sensitivity or low sensitivity have the same ability to discriminate texture. So I'll talk about the methods there in a little bit. But we wanted to also measure their oral processing while they are doing these discrimination tasks. And we wanted to compare the high sensitivity group to a low sensitivity group. We defined that as the top quartile and the bottom quartile. So the top 25% of people on our total index were brought in as the high sensitivity group. The low sensitivity group was the lowest 25%. So to answer this question here at the bottom is, how does oral sensitivity relate to mastication and sensitivity to texture changes? So this study is still in process, so our N is a little bit low here, but I want you to keep in mind that each of these people are doing several observations. So the N of the observations is actually very high. The amount of people is not so. The discrimination ability, simple triangle testing methodology. We had gels of four different hardnesses, and then we'd pair them all up in a series of triangle tests, and we would just count how many correct answers they got over time and how many incorrect answers they had over time. To measure oral processing, we used a video jaw tracking technique that Aaron Wilson at the Plant and Food Research Center in New Zealand provided for us. So this on the screen is actually a non-animated version of the animated version that we created, but this person here is going through the study. They are wearing basically a frame and a black dot on their chin. That black dot is what's being measured. So that black dot's movement in relationship to that frame is basically somebody's mastication movement, their behavior. This is a lot less frustrating and a lot more invasive than traditional techniques like EMG, where you're sticking electrodes on people's jaw muscles and those types of things. It still looks funny. No difference in discriminatory ability. Surprising, right? People that are really good at, really sensitive to touch in the mouth, and people that are not very sensitive to touch in the mouth don't have any differences in their ability to discriminate these gummies. So what we think is going on here is basically you work with what you have, right? And just, for example, a golfer could be tall, a golfer could be short. They develop a skill set based around their physiological makeup. And I think that people that have these differences in sensitivity have that their whole life. It's not changing most likely. So as we saw from the first study, I should say. So basically, they're maximizing the tools that they have. So their discrimination ability is not different. However, this is where we start to see some of the interesting things with mastication. So on the screen here are the three most common paths of travel for that black dot on that person's chin. These are the three main chewing cycles that are common in humans: the crossed cycle, the crescent cycle, and the circular cycle. I see a lot of people trying to mimic that movement. All right, that's cool. So anyways, what we found is people with low sensitivity are significantly more likely to use a crossed cycle and a crescent cycle than people with high sensitivity. Conversely, people with high sensitivity were much likely not to have chewing patterns that don't fit any of these three common patterns. So any of these three chewing cycles are not commonly found in people that have high sensitivity, even though these are what humans use to chew food up. So what this is showing is that people that are really high in sensitivity have a very dynamic chewing pattern. They're constantly changing it. They're not rhythmically moving their jaws like their brainstem's trying to tell them. They're modulating that information through tactile feedback. That's our hypothesis, right? People that are high in sensitivity are going to be having more tactile feedback to be able to feed that back into that masticatory performance loop. So this can, like I talked about some of the simple ways in which you can get tactile feedback, but basically here, people's ability to identify where the bolus is at, where particles are at, those types of things are probably playing a big role. And then they can have a targeted mastication approach to that food, to what's in their mouth at that current time. And you often don't know, especially a lot of times ahead of time, you're talking about milliseconds here. So that's what would create that dynamic chewing perception. And going further, that first reason we have oral tactile feedback would be to not chop our own tongue off, to not hurt ourselves. So these are actually extracted parameters where people that chew with a higher amplitude and close their jaw faster if they have high sensitivity, meaning that they're probably more confident in their judgment that they're not going to harm themselves in that chewing process. They're less hesitant in their chewing. So the overall conclusions would be that oral sensitivity score is modulated with age. Texture discrimination was not influenced by oral sensitivity, and also mastication performance was not affected by sensitivity. However, oral tactile sensitivity influences chewing behavior. And so if you were here for the speed posters, you saw that maybe salad preference can be driven by mouth behavior. This is just a different measure for mouth behavior. It's not the smooshers, the crunchers, the chewers, but these people are using alternative mastication strategies, and there definitely could be differences in texture perception and texture preference based upon how they're processing food orally, even so far as back as food choice. So with that, I would like to thank my lab, especially Grace, who did most of the work, and Aaron in New Zealand, and everybody else back in Knoxville. So thank you.
One question. We have time for one question.
Hi. Ale Munoz from IRIS. Thank you very much for the great work that you do. And it's important to understand all the complexity of chewing. And for those of us who are involved in oral and manual texture evaluation, your research is great. I have a question for you. The first part of your results where you show the oral sensitivity, the tests that you chose were the ability to detect or recognize shapes, right? So I was wondering if you know of any research or you have been involved in any research where the sensitivity is not so much related to the shape, but the actual roughness or lack of smoothness of particles. Because, you know, in actual texture evaluation, more so than having people detect shape, you want the ability to detect lack of smoothness or the smoothness or gritty, grainy, lumpy. Could you tell me a little bit about the relationship of those results with that other sensitivity?
Well, yeah, so I like to lump in mastication behavior into it. So if there's not chewing involved, I'm not particularly interested in my lab. I do know that Chris Simons has done a lot of work on roughness and actually shown how extremely sensitive we are to roughness in the oral cavity. And then beverages, there's quite a bit of good stuff on how particle size and particle shape influence grittiness or conversely like decreased creaminess of a beverage. And I wouldn't have the references off the top of my head, but the creaminess literature really hones in on those particle shapes, sizes. They don't tend to concentrate though on the person. They're talking more about the ingredient or the product itself. But I could kind of double back and get back to you.